So Krishna has just sent Dwarka to Dwarka, and that the fruit of that, of Dwarka's going to Dwarka after the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and the departure of Lord Balaram, is described in the first canto, because he meets, Dwarka goes, and according to Krishna, on Krishna's order, he tells Arjuna to take all the queens and Krishna's family members to Hastinapur. So at that time, Yudhisthira Maharaj is alone, not alone, but with Bhim, in Hastinapur, and he notices that there are many omens. What chapter is that? 14. And then he's inquiring, could it be that Lord Krishna has departed from this world? And then Arjuna comes and confirms the terrible truth. And that was the sign that Yudhisthira had been waiting for. In the third chapter, 13th chapter, it's described that he had gotten the order from Narada that he should remain in this world as long as Krishna is in this world, and Krishna's departure from this world is the sign that his time to leave this world had also come. So in the end of the 14th chapter, the Pandavas retire timely. They all, one by one, leave and just head north because Krishna had departed. Kali Yuga was beginning, practically speaking, and the age had changed. It was time for a different time. No longer the time for pious kings like Yudhisthira. Kali had entered. So Kali was staved off by Maharaj Prickett, which is described in the next two chapters, 15 and 16. And then the cursing of Maharaj Prickett by the Sringi in the next two chapters, 16, 17, and then 18. Is that 18 or 19? That's 19. So we lost one chapter in the midst of all that. And then Prickett Maharaj's departure and the speaking of the Bhagavatam, the appearance of Sukadev Goswami, where he asks, Prickett Maharaj asks the sages and then Sukadev Goswami, what is the proper subject to hear about? What should I engage my consciousness on now that it's imminent, it's soon that I'm going to die, depart from this world? What is the proper activity? What is the proper hearing subject? So, and Sukadev's first reply is that the question itself is glorious. To ask that question, what should I be doing with my death approaching? And astoundingly as it is for devotees, that most people just don't ask that question. What should I be doing now that it's nearing the time for me to depart from this world? My body and soul, me and the body are going to separate. What should I be doing? What is the best activity for me to do? So Dwarka has gone. And then the demigods, Lord Brahma arrived at Prabhas. Krishna is still seated with Lord Shiva and his consorts, the sages, the Prajapatis, and all the demigods headed by Indra. They had all come to be present and to welcome Krishna as he moved on and to glorify him. They had also announced the time for his departure in the first chapter of the 11th canto. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on that verse. In the 31st chapter, the disappearance of Krishna is explained, as well as the disappearance of Devaki, Vasudeva, Rukmini, and others. It is just like when the drama is over, everyone takes off their costumes and moves on. Śrīla Swāmī explains that after arranging for the devotees to enter into the yadus, when he took his birth, Krishna again had them return to their previous positions, and then by his own will, he entered his spiritual abode in his spiritual body. 2 and 3. The forefathers, the siddhas, the gandharvas, the vidyadharas, the great serpents also came. With the charanas, the yakshas, the rakshasas, the kanaras, the apsaras, and relatives of Garuda, greatly eager to witness the departure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As they were coming, all these personalities variously chanted and glorified the birth and activities of Lord Saori of Krishna. O King, crowding the sky with their many aeroplanes, they showered down flowers with great devotion. Seeing before him Brahma, the grandfather of the universe, along with the other demigods who are all his personal and powerful expansions, the Almighty Lord closed his lotus eyes, fixing his mind within himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We'll read the purport here. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Lord Krishna had previously answered the prayers of Lord Brahma and the other demigods who had requested the Lord to descend within this universe for the protection of his servants, the demigods. So this was in the first chapter of the 10th canto, which is entitled The Advent of Krishna. The demigods had received the prayers of Bhumi, and then together, headed by Lord Brahma, they went to Swetadeep to pray to the Lord that now it is time for your descent, because the demonic forces in the world have increased so much. Now the demigods arrived before the Lord, each one desiring to take the Lord to his own planet, because they wouldn't say, please come to my house, because they said, please come to my planet. They were all hoping that he would come to my planet. So this is important to keep in perspective in the light of the philosophical tattvic points that Vishwanath has just explained, that this is just like the setting of the sun. The sun doesn't cease to exist. It moves on. It just simply moves on. So Krishna is about to move on. To avoid these innumerable social obligations, the Lord closed his eyes as if absorbed in samadhi. That's so cute. I once saw one sadhu in Barsana. He wasn't exactly a devotee, but we asked him why he was, because he didn't practice, he didn't chant. What he did is he had a mantra that his guru had given him, and he used to just lie down for almost all day, all night, and every once in a while he would sit up and do some pranayama and then go back, lie down again. And he was actually a very completely renounced sadhu, and the local people respected him. He was very highly on the jnana platform. And we asked him why he didn't perform bhakti, and he said, my guru didn't give me the process of bhakti, so I'm following what he gave me. But in future lives, I'll be able to practice bhakti. So he was very, very humble and very, very nice. So anyway, he'd be lying down, and sometimes he would sit up, and then he would clean his clothes and things like that. But he would lie down, and then I saw that one time that some local people, because people would come to him and ask him questions and things like that. So they came to him and they were saying, Sadhu, Sadhu Maharaj, Sadhu Maharaj. And he just remained, just lying down. As soon as they left, he got up and started doing other things. He didn't want to come out to have to talk to people. So Krishna closed his eyes. Srila Jiva Goswami adds that Lord Krishna closed his eyes to instruct the yogis how to leave this mortal world without attachment to one's mystic opulence. All the demigods, including Brahma, are mystic expansions of Lord Krishna, and yet the Lord closed his eyes to emphasize that one should fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead when departing from this world. But we have heard, based on Krishna's instructions to Uddhava, that one should fix his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead not only when departing from this world, but practically speaking with devotion as one is working and acting in this world, one should continuously fix his mind on him. And that will remove all contaminations and intoxications caused by the modes of material nature from one's consciousness. Text 6. Without employing the mystic Agni meditation to burn up his transcendental body, because this is the fire that yogis can use to burn their body, but Krishna has a transcendental body. So without employing the mystic Agni meditation to burn up his transcendental body, which is the all-attractive resting place of all the worlds and the object of all contemplation and meditation, Lord Krishna entered his own abode. There's a comment by Vishwanath here. The statements of the previous verse, this verse, and later verses as well cannot be taken as being literally true. Sri Goswami explains that the Lord rejected the erroneous process of dying at will, which is practiced by yogis, that therefore he didn't use the fire methodology. He did not burn up his body by meditation on fire because his body was attractive to all people and was the object of contemplation and meditation. Others explain the verse as follows, taking his body, which was like pure gold, as if being taken from fire after heating it without being burned, he entered his abode. The meaning is that the Lord showed doubtful persons that his body could not be burned. As soon as Lord Krishna left the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. Kettle drums resounded in the heavens and flowers showered from the sky. Just like that, in one verse, after everything happened with the Yadu dynasty and after the so many forefathers, etc., well, the associates will come after. And in between Krishna's actual departure and him sending Durga away, who came? Who? Uddhava came, and Maitreya Muni after. They came and they saw Krishna just sitting peacefully under that peepal tree, under that aswata tree. And Uddhava was so happy to see him. He arrived just in time. The Yadu dynasty had already departed, and Krishna had not yet left. So there was just that short gap of time, and Uddhava had returned and saw him there. And by providence, by fate, by divine arrangement, Maitreya Muni, who wasn't a devotee at that time, who was an impersonalist, he also arrived just at that time. Uddhava didn't stay to see the departure of Krishna. He left. And Krishna had asked Uddhava. First of all, Uddhava asked Krishna, he asked questions, please explain to me the same things that you explained to Brahma. So at that time Krishna explained to him the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. And then understanding the process still even further, he still asked further questions after the whole Uddhava Gita. He wanted to hear more, he wanted to know more. And the process is the goal is prema, and the process is eva gigyaso. Always be looking for Krishna. Always be searching wherever you are, and at every time, at every place. Have the consciousness open to Krishna and Krishna's mercy. And then Krishna told Uddhava something about Vidura. He remembered Vidura just before he left. Isn't that astounding? Just of course we can't really imagine it, but just imagine, try and contemplate what Vidura must have thought and how he felt when Uddhava passed that message on to him, and when he learned that just before he departed, he was thinking of him. Vidura cried. And why was Krishna thinking of Vidura? Because Krishna is the Supreme Person and he can do as he likes. And Vidura had protected Krishna when he, not Krishna, but he protected his dear devotees, the Pandavas. Then Uddhava left, Maitreya Muni left, and it was time for Krishna to leave. And Krishna left, departed from this world. And the instant that Krishna left, and this will be explained in the 12th canto, Kali began his work, or was able, or tried to begin his work. Yeah. As soon as Lord Krishna left the earth, at least Kali Yuga began that moment. And the astrological configurations that describe this will be explained in canto 12 in the beginning. So as soon as Krishna left, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. Kettle drums resounded in the heavens, and flowers showered from the sky. Purport. So on one level, it's such a sad moment, but Vishwanath, or in the purport, quoting Srila Sridhar Swami, all the demigods were jubilant because each one thought Lord Krishna was coming to his own planet. So just to balance it for us, Krishna was moving on. Most of the demigods and other higher beings led by Brahma could not see Lord Krishna as he was entering his own abode, since he did not reveal his movements. But some of them did catch sight of him, and they were extremely amazed. They were amazed because they were masters of so many mystic powers. But Krishna's mystic powers far surpassed theirs. 9. Just as ordinary men could not ascertain the path of a lightning bolt as it leaves a cloud, the demigods could not trace out the movements of the Lord as he returned to his abode. A few of the demigods, however, notably Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, could ascertain how the Lord's mystic power was working. And thus they became astonished. All the demigods praised the Lord's mystic power and then returned to their own planets. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. An example is given to show that they could not see the Lord's destination. Just as the destination of lightning cannot be seen by humans, the destination of Krishna as he left this earth could not be perceived by the devotees. But his associates could see. This is Sridhar Swami's explanation. Having come from Vaikuntha, from the Karana ocean and the milk ocean, when Krishna had appeared, the associates each now thought, I am bringing my Lord to my abode. But each could not see the other by the Lord's Yogamaya. Thus the Lord went to those abodes with those associates who were delighted. It should be understood that when the Lord appeared on earth, the associates of these Vishnu forms also appeared along with the Yadus, with their masters, the Vishnu forms. These associates returned to their places along with the Vishnu forms when Krishna departed from this world, because all the different forms of the Lord enter into him when he comes as Krishna, from Chiradakshaya Vishnu to all the different incarnations, and for different pastimes, Krishna uses his full nature up to that point. Like when the king is sitting on the throne, he's using his power of kingship. And he uses his power of authority and control of the armies, which are exhibitions of his kingly power. But he doesn't use the full extent of his personality. He doesn't use the playful nature that he enjoys with his children. He waits till he's in a different place to exhibit that part of his nature. But it's the same person. So Krishna, all the incarnations, were within Krishna, and then when Krishna departs, the associates of those incarnations also depart. That is the indication. These associates return to their places along with the Vishnu forms when Krishna departed from this world. And Krishna also returned to Dwarka invisibly and performed uppercut pastimes with those devotees who were Dwarkavasis, and the demigods left, and Krishna also left a universal form behind. And the devatas were astonished. We thought that we were masters of yoga, but we cannot understand where he went. They praised Krishna. Who can do such a thing? We are omniscient but cannot understand this. Though we are masters of yoga, we cannot see his destination achieved by his yoga. But his associates, that was the devatas, but his associates knew. They can see his destination, that he has entered his abode. My dear king, Sukadeva is speaking to Prakrit. You should understand that the Supreme Lord's appearance and disappearance, which resemble those of embodied conditioned souls, are actually a show enacted by his illusory energy. Just like the performance of an actor. After creating this universe, he enters into it, plays with it, within it for some time, and at last winds it up. Then the Lord remains situated in his own transcendental glory, having ceased from the functions of cosmic manifestation. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the so-called fight among the members of the Yadu dynasty was actually a display of the pastime potency of the Lord, since Lord Krishna's personal associates are never subject to ordinary birth and death like conditioned souls. This being the case, certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself is transcendental to material birth and death, as clearly stated in this verse. So the associates didn't die, they're eternal associates. So what to speak of their master, Lord Krishna? The word natasya of an actor or magician is significant here. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur tells the following story of a certain magician who exhibited the trick of dying. In front of a great king, a magician approached a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth. Approaches a stack of valuable garments, jewels, coins, and so forth, and he placed all placed there by the king. Taking a jeweled necklace, the magician tells the king, "Now I'm taking this necklace, and you can't have it." And he makes the necklace disappear. "Now I'm taking this gold coin, and you can't have it," he says. And he makes the gold coin disappear. Next, challenging the king in the same way, the magician makes 7,000 horses disappear. Then the magician creates the illusion that the king's children, grandchildren, brothers, and other family members have attacked each other, and that nearly all are dead from the violent quarrel. The king hears the magician speaking, and at the same time, he observes these things taking place before him as he sits in the great assembly hall. Then the magician says, "O king, I no longer wish to live. Just as I have studied magic, so also by the mercy of the lotus feet of my guru, I have learned the mystic meditation of yoga. One is supposed to give up one's body while meditating in a holy place, and since you have performed so many pious activities, you are a holy place yourself. Therefore, I shall now give up my body." Thus speaking, the magician sits down in the proper yoga posture, fixes himself in pranayama, pratyahara, dharan, dhyan, samadhi, and becomes silent. A moment later, a fire generated from his trance blazes forth out of his body and burns it to ashes. Then all the wives of the magician, distraught with lamentation, enter into that fire. 3 or 4 days later, after the magician has returned to his own province, he sends one of his daughters to the king. The daughter tells him, "O king, I've just come to your palace, bringing along with me, invisibly, all your sons, grandsons, and brothers in good health, along with all the jewels and other items given by you. Please, therefore, give me whatever you consider fitting remuneration for the wisdom of the magic that has been exhibited before you, the vidya, jadu vidya. In this way, even by ordinary magic, one can simulate birth and death. One might say extraordinary magic. It is not difficult to understand, therefore, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although transcendental to the laws of nature, exhibits his illusory potency so that ordinary fools will think the Lord has left his body like a human being. And as we've heard from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so that Kali will increase his potency. Actually, Lord Krishna returned to his abode in his own eternal body, as confirmed throughout the Vedic literatures. There's also an additional comment that I have of Vishwanath's that I'll read. Parikshit was sad that all people saw the Lord and his associates in this superficial way, that he had died and left behind his body. Sukadev comforted him by explaining the true nature of the Lord's pastimes. Understand that the birth and death activities of the Lord, which are like those of the jivas, are actually a resemblance to the jiva's life produced by Maya. Those actions are not real. So just as they resemble the jiva's activities, in the same way that the jiva's activities are not real, his birth isn't real, his death isn't real, so similarly Krishna's birth and death aren't real. Janma karma chame Takvadeyam punarjanma. Of course Krishna is no Takvadeyam. The birth and death of the jiva who has a body made of semen blood is full of suffering. This example is explained in this verse. I alone have created this confusion, Krishna is saying, of quarrel and fighting with weapons arising from the sage's curse. And following that, I have entered into that scene and played with mortals for a moment by taking the reeds. Then I withdrew from that show by my own powers, and now I remain separate. 12. Lord Krishna brought the son of his guru back from the planet of the Lord of Death in the boy's self-same body. And as the ultimate giver of protection, he saved you also when you were burned by the Brahmastra of whom? Thrown by whom? He conquered in battle even Lord Shiva, who deals death to the agents of death. And he sent the hunter Jara directly to Vaikuntha in his human body. How could such a personality be unable to protect his own self? Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments. By remembering the Lord's extraordinary activities, one must completely give up misconceptions concerning his disappearance. The Lord brought the son of his guru, who had gone to Yamaloka, back to this world in his body, born as the son of his guru, which had been devoured by the Panchajana demon. It was not a different body strong with powers of Brahman. The Lord, who gave you shelter, rescued you, though your body had been burnt by the Brahmastra. Actually, you were destined to die by two Brahmastras, the curse of Brahmana by birth, by Aswatthama, and at death by the Brahmin boy. What more can be said? The Lord defeated Shiva, who is death to death givers, in a battle with Banasura, and the Lord let the hunter Jara go to a special Vaikuntha in his same body. How could the Lord not be capable of protecting the Yadavs? Also within that is that Krishna is protecting you too, my dear Parikshit Maharaj. You, the Lord, certainly can protect. You are fully capable of remaining eternally visible in this world along with your associates. Anyone, 14, who regularly rises early in the morning and carefully chants with devotion the glories of Lord Krishna's transcendental disappearance and his return to his own abode, will certainly achieve the same supreme destination. So if chanting the Lord's glories is his disappearance is that powerful, so the Lord's disappearance is obviously extraordinary. It's not ordinary. It is extraordinary. It is completely extraordinary. But still it is said. As soon as Dwarka reached Dwarka, now on with the pastime, he threw himself at the feet of Vasudeva and Ugrasena. So what a service he was given. And because he was such a servant of Krishna, he had to fulfill it. But it wasn't pleasant for him. So he threw himself at the feet of Vasudeva and Ugrasena and drenched their feet with his tears, lamenting the loss of Lord Krishna. Dwarka delivered the account of the total destruction of the Vrishnis, and upon hearing this, O Parikit, the people became deeply distraught in their hearts and stunned with sorrow. And feeling the overwhelming pain of separation from Krishna, they struck their own faces while hurrying to the place where their relatives lay dead. When Devaki, Rohini, and Vasudeva could not find their sons, Krishna and Rama, because they had left, they lost consciousness out of anguish, distress. Vishwanath comments, the portions of the eternal associates of Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and others had previously gone from Dwarka to Prabhas. Portions of Devaki, Rohini, and other eternal associates then went to Prabhas on hearing the news. The main portions of Devaki and others remained in Dwarka, not visible to the eyes of common men. They would forever engage in uppercut lila with Krishna. Tormented, there's a very interesting comment, short but interesting comment to Vishwanath to text 19, which we'll now read. Tormented because Rohini, Vasudeva, and Devaki went there and they lost consciousness out of anguish, and tormented by separation from the Lord, his parents, Vasudeva, Devaki, gave up their lives at that very spot. My dear Parikit, the wives of the Yadavas then climbed onto the funeral pyres, embracing their dead husbands. And Vishwanath's short comment is, this description should be explained to be superficial and not actually effect. The wives of Lord Balaram also entered the fire and embraced his body, and Vasudeva's wives entered his fire and embraced his body. The daughters-in-laws of Lord Hari entered the funeral fires of their respective husbands, headed by Pradyumna, and Rukmini, and the other wives of Lord Krishna, whose hearts were completely absorbed in him, entered his fire. Purport. It is understood that the anguished scene described here is a display of the Lord's illusory potency, adding a final dramatic note to Lord Krishna's pastimes on the earth. In reality, Lord Krishna returned to his eternal abode in his original body, and his eternal associates returned with him. This final heartbreaking scene of the Lord's pastimes is a creation of the Lord's internal potency that brings the Lord's manifest pastimes to a perfect dramatic end. It's like the curtain is just simply going down in the end of Krishna's stay, his drama, the pastimes, his lila. It is going down. It's over here. Arjuna felt great distress over separation from Lord Krishna, his dearmost friend. But he consoled himself by remembering the transcendental words the Lord had sung to him. So this happens, we hear in Hastinapur. Arjuna was completely devastated, but he remembered the words of Krishna. And then by remembering the instructions of Krishna, he began to associate with Krishna. And the association with Krishna removed his separation, because what can anything in this world remove the separation that the soul or the eternal associates feel from Krishna? Nothing, of course. The real item itself is the only thing of substance. So in that association, and there's a wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada in the 13th or 14th chapter that describes this, that by that association
with the instructions, he got the association with Krishna.
Purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Arjuna remembered such verses from the Gita as Naham Prakasya Savasa, everyone, Yoga Maya Samavrita, Mudayam Nabijananti, Lokamam Ajamavyayam. I am never manifested to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my eternal creative potency, my Yoga Maya, and so the deluded soul knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. Srimi Jiva Goswami has mentioned the Gita verse, Mam evasyate satyam te pratijiros priyosime. You will come to me without fail. I promise this because you are my very dear friend, because you are dear to me, because you are mine, you are priyo, you are dear to me. He promises it twice. He also quotes from the Swagaparva of Mahabharata as follows. There Yudhisthira saw Govinda as the absolute truth in his original personal form. He appeared just as Yudhisthira had seen him before, with all the same characteristics. He was glowing brilliantly with the effulgence coming from his own body, and he was surrounded by his transcendental weapons, the disc and so on, which appeared in their fearsome personified forms. O descendant of Kunti, Lord Madhusudanan was being worshipped by the effulgent hero Arjuna, who also appeared in his original form. When these two lions among men, who are worshipable by the demigods, noticed the presence of Yudhisthira, they approached him with proper respect and offered him worship, because he was senior. 22. Arjuna then saw to it that the funeral rites were properly carried out for the dead, who had no remaining male family members. He executed the required ceremonies for each of the Yadus, one after another. As soon as Dwarka was abandoned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ocean flooded it on all sides, O King, sparing only his palace. Sparing only his palace. Purport. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that whereas the eternal manifestation of the Lord's abode was covered by the ocean, the external manifestation of the Lord's abode was covered by the ocean. The Lord's eternal dwarka existed beyond the material universe and certainly beyond the material ocean. Dwarka had been constructed by Vishwakarma, the architect of the demigods, and the Sudharma assembly hall had been brought from heaven. In that city there were many beautiful and splendorous residences of the aristocratic Yadu dynasty, and the most beautiful residence of all was that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that even in the modern age, people who live near the site of the original dwarka sometimes catch a glimpse of it in the ocean. Ultimately, the Lord's associates and abode are eternal, and one who understands this is qualified to become fully Krishna conscious. Vishnu Thakavati Thakur comments, the Lord's palace was spared. As the next verse states, the Lord is eternally present there. This statement is the view of the Lord who is present in the palace in unmanifested pastimes, not the view of the common people. This is how some explain that the palace remained. Others explain that the ocean flooded Dwarka, but not the palaces of the Yadavas, to show how everything except the Lord is temporary. 24. Lord Madhusudan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is eternally present in Dwarka. It is the most auspicious of all auspicious places, and merely remembering it destroys all contamination. Arjuna took the survivors of the Yadu dynasty, the women, children, and old men, to Indraprastha, where he installed Vajra as ruler of the Yadus. Who is Vajra? He is the great-grandson. He's the Aniruddha is the great grandson, the grandson of Krishna, and his son is Vajra, Vajranab, and he went around. He was the ruler of the Yadus in Mathura, and then he went around all over Braja, and he found out all the pastime places of Krishna, and he named villages after the pastime places of Krishna, and the villages to this day have those or similar names.
because of being named by Brajanab, and he had deities of Krishna made as well, and Uttara fashioned, she was the, and by the time of when Pariket Maharaj is within the womb of Uttara, she is the last person remaining who is actually, Uttara was the last person remaining who had actually, on the earth, who had seen Krishna, the wife of Abhimanyu. So the show is moving on. The whole show, the traveling road show of Krishna's pastimes is moving onward.
Arjuna, hearing from Arjuna of the death of their friend, my dear king, your grandfathers established you as the maintainer of the dynasty and left to prepare for their departure from this world, 13th chapter of the first canto. A person who with faith engages in chanting the glories of these various pastimes and incarnations of Vishnu, the Lord of Lords, will gain liberation from all sins. The all auspicious exploits, Itam Harir Bhagavato Richir Avitara Viryani Bala Charitani Chasantamani Anyatra Chehachash Shutani Grihan Manusho Bhaktim Param Paramahangsagato Labeta. Let's chant it again. Itam Hare Bhagavato Richaravatara Viryani Bala Charitani Santamani Anyatra Cheyacha Shutani Grihan Manusho Bhaktim Param Paramaham Sagato Labeta. The all auspicious exploits of the all attractive incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also the pastimes he performed as a child, are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. Anyone who clearly chants these descriptions of his pastimes will attain transcendental loving service unto Lord Krishna, who is the goal of all perfected sages. My comment, interesting, it says, this 11th canto was completed at the new Gokul South American pilgrimage site, state of Sao Paulo, Brazil, on Friday, March 26, 1982. But there is another comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that's similar. The commentary on the 31st chapter of the 11th canto called Sarata Darshini, written for bringing joy to the minds of the devotees, according to the previous authorities, has been completed on the Saptami Tirthi of the Agrahayana month at Giriraj Govardhan. May this commentary make the Lord pleased with me. I have revealed my ignorance in explaining things. Though others may laugh, my goal is to please the devotees. So sweetly ends the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So any questions or comments? Yes. Yes. Okay, let me answer the first question. Because in that verse, if you remember the comment, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave with one hand and took with the same hand. He took away with the same hand. He said that all we have to do is follow the process. This was Krishna's summary of the instructions, right? Just worship me with devotion and have no other motives. And then the product will automatically be there. And the example that Vishwanath gave was that if you obtain something, you see it instantaneously once you have it. So if you have the process, the attainment of the result will come. So there's no effort required. So that was the example about crying, etc., and lamenting. Remember? But then he said, and I could read it, there's the 22nd verse. And then he said, but because, something to what you're saying, but because that effort is so glorious, because it's Krishna, then the effort is so much appreciated too. So both sides are there.
So this is, it is as use, the devotees find it useless to worry about eating and shelter. How can the Lord who sustains the universe ignore the devotees? So that's on the material level, that they don't make an effort for those things. It is as useless as efforts executed out of fear and lamentation. They don't affect the result. Just as by attaining one's object naturally becomes visible. By attaining me as the object of bhakti, bhakti appears on its own. So when you have Krishna, then bhakti is there. Still, the sincere devotees always endeavor for bhakti. That endeavor shows his great attraction to bhakti. Effort is thus a great quality. So in the midst of that, which do we apply? Do we become very, feel the security of being on the path, or do we endeavor due to attraction? Huh? Well, we have to endeavor, and sometimes we have to be peaceful that we're on the path, and we have to be satisfied. So to know which one to do at which time, huh? Yes, try to be fully endeavoring in complete anxiety and be peaceful and at the same time, both together. That's confusing. But therefore, in the next verse, he says, Krishna says that. The devotee is the most intelligent amongst the intelligent and the most clever amongst the clever, because he attains my eternal sarup by using his temporary body and attains me, the only truth, though he is inconsequential jiva. That's the translation here. So in other words, if you can figure out when to apply which principle in a steady way and not drive yourself crazy, but just know when to apply which principle. When is the time to lean this way and when is the time to lean that way? Then you are very, very intelligent. And if you make mistakes in this way, and because we can use our material ambitions and mistake that as spiritual ambitions, and we can give ourselves tons of trouble in that way. So to know how to apply the proper principles at the proper time takes great intelligence, great fortune, and great guidance as well. Sometimes when we're on the path and it seems like there's so far to go and we see so many anartas and no attraction to Krishna, then sometimes we have to look backwards and see we've come so far. But then we're thinking, if we say, I've come so far, it's so far, look how much better I am than these people. If that mood comes into our mind, then we need a little more attraction to Krishna and more desire, and so that we can see that Krishna is so far away and I'm lost without his mercy, etc. What's the second question? Let me ask you a question. Oh no, I won't put it in a question form. But let's make a comment. That when one is intoxicated, then there has no need to be a reason for the quarrel. No, yeah, but. Well, there's maybe a lesson for the people of this world of the dangers of intoxication. They even went to fight with Krishna. But yes, that is what is the opposite of. What is the opposite of intoxicated?
Sober.
Sober means dhira. Dhira means you see things as they are. So when someone is intoxicated, either by some intoxicating substance or the material energy or by the maya, you don't see things how they are. So that means you don't act rationally. That is the very nature of the material world. It makes people act irrationally. That happens all the time. People take shelter of illusion. Does it make sense to take shelter of illusion? But yet people do this continuously. It's not surprising that intoxicated people act irrationally. It would be surprising if people were sober acting
irrationally. Udiras, so all it takes is an intoxicating substance. But take this metaphor and make it bigger and look at the material world. People can become intoxicated by a billion things in the material world. So there is a point where you're not intoxicated. As soon as you start playing with the intoxications of the material energy, you become intoxicated. You're drawn in. And you lose your free will, practically speaking, due to the power of the modes of material nature. So beware of intoxicating substances. And the only, and that means keep sober, which means keep in touch with reality, which means always remember Krishna. Otherwise, we can't avoid the intoxication of the material energy. And then we're under the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Question 3. But his uppercut lila isn't on earth, it's fully in the spiritual realm. But Dwarka is not on earth, nor is Vrindavan on earth. It's the spiritual realm. And Krishna doesn't come to earth in a technical sense. He stays always in Vrindavan, the spiritual world, and his team dham, his three abodes. But what is the difference between the Dwarka in the uppercut lila and the Dwarka in the spiritual realm? So, and for me, the question is, well, how do you get from the Vrindavan or the Dwarka of this, what I perceive in this world, to the uppercut, unmanifested? Because unmanifest just means it's unmanifested to me. So how does one get there? How does the unmanifested become manifested? And the answer is through the channel of separation. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yes. In the 22nd verse or the 21st?
That one, another one is like, Krishna is a sport manager.
He's a...
Krishna is an expert manager.
Expert manager.
Actually, he fulfills the desire of all the people. Like, somebody is going to heaven. Actually, they should not feel, I didn't went to spiritual world. That's why for them, he arranged some lilas for them. And somebody is going to Vaikuntha, somebody is going to Goloka, all the people there. Respective place they are going, but they don't feel I didn't went to another place. I didn't call to me.
That's interesting. His pastimes fulfill so many purposes and satisfy so many different kinds of people.
Something from what you said in the beginning of the class, from the previous chapter.
Yeah.
This something that. is bewildering to me. It can be bewildering to me. I'm not sure if I understand it properly. The instructions about respecting every living entity, Sri Krishna Chakravarti Thakur categorizes as jnana,
yes,
as opposed to bhakti. So, since we are to practice bhakti, it may sound as if it's not something we are supposed to do. As if it's not, as if a bhakta would not be supposed to try to respect for and express respect for a living entity. Because this is for jnanis.
Yes.
So.
Shall I speak a little about that?
Yeah, would you like to?
Well, my understanding is it goes back to that same question.
My same question.
Yeah. So. If you take up bhakti and learn to love Krishna, then automatically you will respect all living entities because they're part and parcel of Krishna. If you go the other way and try to respect all living entities, then, because they're souls, because of this, because they're in Krishna, like that, if you go that way, then it's more the process of jnanis. So devotees are asked to give respect to all living entities too. It's not that being disrespectful is the path of devotion and being respectful is the path of jnana. But the emphasis and where one puts one's consciousness, like just to bring it to extreme, a jnani may go around as his path, as his sadhana, just going around offering obeisances to every living entity regardless of what they are or something like that. But a devotee, he's engaged in Krishna's service. So it's quite different what their path would be. They would be serving Krishna and chanting his glories and hearing the glories of Krishna, and they're getting a taste from that. And then as they get a taste from that, naturally jnanirag asuvairagyam, all jnan comes to them very quickly. So the qualities that come through jnanamarg, when used in Krishna's service, humility, respectfulness, although they're not directly bhakti, because bhakti means shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, etc., hearing, chanting, etc., but yet, in connected to bhakti, they become bhakti. They're like bhakti. But we shouldn't mistake the qualities that become bhakti to the qualities that really bestow bhakti directly. That would be my answer to that question. In other words, respect to all living entities
isn't part of our practice.
And it's not inherently Krishna in the same way that chanting the names of Krishna or hearing his pastimes are inherently, by their potency. Krishna is fully there in the potency, but respected. Of course, in Vrindavan, you're in the dust of Vrindavan, so it becomes different in Vrindavan. So there's Krishna's full potency as it's there in the Bhagavatam, as it's there in the deity, isn't there in respect to all living entities in the same way. But if you respect all living entities as a part of your devotional service, then it's also becomes bhakti.
It's like,
but you just mentioned Trinadapis and Trinataradap, so that's
practices.
But what's the essence of the, in other words, giving respect to all and not demanding any respect for oneself. You could have a person doing that who's not a devotee, up to a certain point, who's not a devotee even. But those are clearly assistance in bhakti in that verse, because it's for the purpose of then kirtaniya siddhahari. So, yes.
Are they in any... So they're not rejected?
No, clearly they're not rejected. It should be developed as one... It should automatically be developed. The 26 qualities of a devotee should develop as one becomes devotionally advanced. But if they're somehow not developed, still the person could be an exalted devotee because of his one quality of being surrendered to Krishna. That's described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I think we all have the experience that when we've engaged very deeply, fully in a devotional practice, such as a wonderful kirtan, there's so much happiness in the heart that one naturally feels so much affection to everyone. Everyone. But because when we're only partially engaged, parts of our mind are engaged, parts of our body are engaged, and parts of us are pulling back, we don't feel that full absorption that naturally and quickly brings
the respect and affection for all living entity. So then the question becomes, well, how to cure the problem? I could go around giving respect to all living entities. I mean, there's so many puppies in Vrindavan that we could be bowing down to, and etc. also. Or I could make the attempt to engage more fully. Now the problem, my whole self in Christian service. Now the problem can come that even if I do respect all living entities, for example, then I might be holding something else back from Krishna, some service that he wants me to do or something like that. And then the ultimate problem is just delayed to be faced later. But then the question comes, is it practical or possible that if I put some emphasis on this side, that will actually help my bhakti? Because right now, I'm not able to do the bhakti in such a way to that it fully engages me, which perhaps leans towards your question.
But actually, purely devotion.
No. It shows, that's one way to look at it, but another way to look at it is it shows how powerful the process of bhakti is. Just by chanting really nicely, you're quickly learning humility.
So, the lack of respect and humility...
No, to become aware, because of the potency of the chanting, you've become aware of what a wretch you are, and you've learned humility.
I haven't.
Huh? Well, you just told me you did. You just found you were inflamed right after that. Well, that's humility, when you become aware of all your shortcomings. I'm saying I'm taking what you're saying and I've turned it around so that...
Okay, yeah. I'm not denying the beauty. I mean, I'm not saying that...
So therefore, what to do with that experience? It's not external to the bhakti experience. It's part of the path of developing humility.
So my understanding was that my devotional so-called ecstasy was not based on complete surrender of giving up the ego, which makes me disrespect or...
No. Another way to look at it is that devotional experience shows that despite your lack of full surrender, the processes of Sarupsiddha Bhakti are so powerful that even a person who's... That's what the verse says, that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that one gets very quick results even if one doesn't have faith, even.
At the same time, don't want to be that category that's mentioned by Krishna's Kriyaj Goswami, Bahujama, Kuriya, Dishavana, Kirtana, Tabutana, Paya.
But just see what the example that you're, huh?
I can chant
for thousands of births,
and
not get the result.
But
what is the point that will make the difference there?
Surrender.
Well, and what's the point prior to surrender? Humility. And what's the point prior to humility? We're just trying to taste the steps. It's to become aware, a consciousness of the rascalness in the heart, of the false ego in the heart. And then, but on what level do we accept it? And then the next step, surrender, comes when there's a need. So the surrender may not be at the depth of the consciousness. But if we become conscious in this way, then our the need becomes more and more apparent, and the false ego and the mind is very dogged, very stubborn. So what will it take before we fully give ourselves to Krishna? And it's also not it's not a black or white. It's either we've given surrendered or not surrendered. It's a process of ever deepening surrender.
My understanding has been that it would be very advantageous for me to practice bhakti on the basis of a surrender in terms of being respectful and humble. Otherwise, my so-called ecstatic experience, my experiences may just feed my false ego, maybe more and more problem.
But what happens right after that? A conditioned soul will become proud, but when he's received a gift by Krishna's grace. But then the next step is that Krishna so kindly arranges a humiliating experience.
And sometimes I just become angry.
A more humiliating experience.
Sometimes it takes me several years before I actually become
still
aware.
More humiliating.
It's only by the grace of but this humiliation or some drop of awareness, humble awareness, it seems to be condemned as part of
it's not condemned at all. But when one performs bhakti, it automatically comes if one becomes aware. Not that we should take up the process of learning humility first.
As part of bhakti, I mean, as a natural part of bhakti.
But no one is making a line of distinction between the practice of bhakti and the development of the qualities that naturally come from a devotee, a sincere devotee. The distinction is made, if any it's made, that to do these things as separate endeavor for humility, outside of the process of bhakti. So therefore my question was, so that's not so recommended, but on the other side is bhakti is recommended because it will give birth to the other qualities. But somewhat in between is, can you make an attempt to develop those qualities in conjunction with bhakti? That was what and that I say should be done under guidance. Keep going. Because when we're not making, there's a false dilemma I think you're presenting, it seems to me, that we're saying that humility, when you become conscious of the disparity between what you should be and what you are, that's separate from bhakti. And being aware of that is not bhakti, but no one's saying that. We're saying that it naturally comes from bhakti. It springs from the practice of bhakti. It springs from the good chanting. So one doesn't have to make the separate endeavor to develop your humility outside of bhakti.
Yeah, inside of bhakti? Like,
well, that's the question that I said. It's an interesting question.
As I practice bhakti, isn't it a part of bhakti to do my bhakti humbly and respectfully?
But we also see that when we try to do it humbly and respectfully, when the internal realization isn't there, we become something like Putana. But there's a different kind of, you know, we learn, and that's one of the things when there's a whole set of behaviors in devotional service that we learn. How to look on the outside like a devotee. So we fall into the danger of that, the possible danger of that kind of.
I'm not speaking about behaving. Behaving is helpful. I'm speaking about the moods, the attitudes.
Yes. So behavior from the point, that's what I'm saying. That we can also try to develop the behavior on a more subtle level of something and it not hitting the core. Because that's the verse, yasyasya bhakti bhagavati kinchana, and that's why Gokashwar Das Babaji or Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when I observe the behavior of Gokashwar Das Babaji Maharaj, I see that only a devotee can have perfect character in this world, because he has no material attachments due to his attachments to Krishna.
So giving up attachment seems to be a part of not being humble.
Everyone says that. It seems like we're saying the same thing again and again, though.
Because if you practice bhakti and attach to Krishna, then param dristvena vartate. Okay, what would you see as a proposal? Put it in the positive. That's
My proposal is that as I practice bhakti, I should do it from anabhilashna shunyam or sarva devinirmuktam, as Rupa Goswami explains, means without the false ego. So I do these two things at the same time. Practice bhakti not as a being aware that I can create false pseudo-spiritual egos. I'm a great devotee, I'm a saint, I'm renounced, I'm humble, I'm whatever. And try to practice bhakti without these upadhis. And that is the proof of that, or the touchstone which can show whether I'm actually giving up, is that I will not be angry at others and I will be respectful to others. So to me it seems like an integral part of bhakti as part of the surrender, the threshold.
Okay, so...
Every time these qualities are said to be not a part of bhakti...
But I've already explained the point. I mean, from what I understand, it's not that a person practicing bhakti won't have these qualities. It's a matter of that he doesn't try to separately cultivate the qualities. That they naturally come and he becomes aware of them. So naturally a devotee. And yet, the wonderful point is given that even if a person doesn't have those qualities, if he has that one quality, it's still glorious and has to be respected and be careful of offending such a person. Okay. Why don't we end here? Yes.
I was reading one of my Guru Maharaj's sentences. It's how to become humble by acknowledging the greatness of others. I think that was like a separate endeavor, but at the same time it's also linked with others. Others means great devotees, others as devotees. So.
Yeah, there's a whole the first canto, there's a whole list of characteristics of things like that, how to do this, how to escape from dizziness, to stand up, how to do this, do that. Okay. Let's end now. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.